Esteemed co-chair, Dr. Moy,
then
my time chair. Okay. Okay, everybody, I'm going to ask that we get started again. We are close to the finish line. This is the home stretch. I am going to let Nicole frame the discussion regarding priority and options for QI and public reporting, because this one slide summarizes the work that we still have to do. Okay? So, Nicole?
So our last discussion over the past hour or so has recapped, in terms of disparities measurement, what we're looking to achieve. You all have given some great additions on what to avoid. The paper also then goes through some design options. And we have touched on some of these already, but we wanted to pull this list up and just find out if there are any gaps between what's presented and maybe additional suggestions that the group has. If I can quickly go through these options that are listed. I don't know if folks can see that.
Could you explain exception reporting?
So there's often a distinction made between exceptions and exclusions. So exclusions to a measure are ones you make when you carefully delineate exactly what they are, and those patients are removed from the denominator. Exceptions is more the post hoc analysis. As you're seeing a patient, you'll go, you know, this patient doesn't really fit, and you accept them and give a reason for it. So it's more of a post hoc versus pre exclusion.
Quick question about this. Can we choose all of them? Are we supposed to choose one? What is the choice?
No, these were drawn from Joel's paper, and he had just identified them as any number of design options. So the question is whether you feel some are not, are totally inappropriate, or are there others?
So we could endorse all of them if we wanted. Okay.
Yes, and they're not mutually exclusive.
Thank you. Correct. Thank you.
Romano?
So I want to clarify the second one, which sounds like it's an either or. As I'm reading it, paying for performance based on lower racial or ethnic disparities versus, and I think you can do both, actually. You can show overall quality reporting and disparities for
noted
reporting.
Noted.
So I don't think it should be a versus.
So that needs to change that. Okay. Other comments? Marshall? That's okay. You did. Okay, good. Just turn on.
Did anyone pick up what was meant by the second to last bullet about the structural characteristics? I mean, why is he singling that out here?
And there may be some questions, since Joel is gone, that we may have to circle back and ask him, because I don't know that any of us are prepared to answer that. Unless you are, Helen, or anyone else?
I was going to ask a question about that. The second bullet was a verse. I wonder whether it's, and Marshall maybe, or the researchers in the room can maybe comment on this, I wonder whether that point is about how in the past, paying for the higher quality performance in general, that were not shown to reduce health disparities. You know, it was a case where, you know, the better performing hospitals got better and got the payment, but the lower performing hospital never really got the resources or were able to improve. So I wonder, it's not whether we should do one or the other, it's just that, you know, what was effective in reducing disparities and paying for quality improvement didn't have as much impact. as maybe what's your proposal now, which is paying for performance on lowering the disparity specifically.
So I want Helen to clarify, and then I'm going to go around the table and let people comment.
I think he's referring to the issue that they brought up yesterday, and there are four criteria as well, that there's a preference for the outcome measures over process measures, ultimately. But I think what he's saying here is that in terms of public reporting, for where we are right now in terms of disparities in cultural competency, structural measures may be that first step out the gate. So proportion of patients have access to interpreter does the hospital have interpreter services available, as opposed to getting to more of the process slash outcome measures that get closer about what we want. I assume that's what he meant. We can clarify with him.
Go ahead, Romana. Oh, you know what? I actually promised that we would start down there and then we'll come back out. Go ahead, Edward.
They had presented some criteria regarding to avoiding, I think they called cherry picking and lemon dropping.
Correct.
I don't see anything up there about that. So I'm wondering if there needs to be some consideration to access. So in other words, does the organization provide appropriate access to their services to minority, racial ethnic minority patients?
That's a good point. I would actually prefer to keep the term cherry picking and lemon dropping. I thought it was great. Yeah, great term. Next person, Mara, you had a comment?
And I don't know if it's appropriate for this piece or somewhere else in the call for measures, but we were talking a little bit about measures that might specifically address usage of language services, use of health navigators, Lakotas, et cetera. Is there a way to sort of reference that it might not be a typical QI, you know, measure, but that we also would be looking for those types of measures as well? Like I know the Speaking Together project did develop some measures for tracking, you know, collection of language data and collection of, you know, provision of language services and intake and discharge, and so those might be useful as a way to expand the call for proposal to get some of those if they're relevant.
Okay. Romana, you had a no? Okay. Anyone else? Yes, Ernest.
This relates to the framing of design options, which is a very generic kind of thing. And I think these kind of look like discrete, separate activities that are independent of from other kinds of quality improvement and public reporting activities. And I think, maybe that's implicit, but a better framing of it is that looking at disparities and measuring disparities should be an essential component of all quality improvement and public reporting activities,
as opposed to something separate,
which they say, oh, well, we just won't do that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. I don't think that was brought up in the past, but I do think it's an incredibly important point that you raised. Right. Other comments around the table? So I am hearing that we're not going to necessarily select any of these, and that we actually think that they should all stay on the list with a few additions or contextualizing a few things. But other than that, the list is, we feel, comprehensive. Is there anything we're missing? Colette?
I don't know how this fits in, but certainly people are looking more and more in terms of incenting the patients, not just the providers.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
And not just the providers. So
oh,
I know that would be a consideration.
So providing incentives either not to just the provider, but also to the patient. Is that what you think? Okay. Any other comments, thoughts? Do you need, to the staff is the question, anything from us in terms of fleshing those out, or is it sufficient for us to reach consensus that the list is comprehensive?
I think right now that's sufficient. When there is a final report, things come back around with context provided, and you'll have the opportunity then to work with it.
Donna, please.
For the final bullet, I would modify to suggest risk-adjusting payments to providers rather than solely risk-adjusting performance measures. As currently worded, it looks like an either-or.
I think that's probably the word of caution on several of the issue of, you know, excluding, or, you know, either-or as opposed to both.
Same with the first bullet.
Right. Right, and we talked about the versus, so we have to eliminate that. Anything else? Any other comments?
I just have a question.
Yes.
Because maybe I'm confused about the terminology in the last bullet. Didn't we talk about not risk-adjusting performance measures? No, no, but I thought Donna said that it's red is an either or. So the idea of risk adjusting payments rather than risk adjusting performance measures. When you were saying either or, did you mean to add in also risk adjusting performance measures? Maybe I misunderstood.
No, actually, you picked up on what might be a wording problem. It shouldn't be risk adjusting performance measures, but risk adjusting performance achievement. So currently, providers. Like paper performance, you're paid for achieving the performance measures. They're suggesting also considering risk adjusting the population risk. So the word measure should be taken out of the first sentence.
I thought that what we were talking about with Joel earlier, you don't want to sort of risk adjust within your population, you want to, because that may mask the disparities, or maybe the terms I'm just confusing. That am I confused as I'll get out? I thought what Joel was saying is you don't want to sort of risk adjust for SES or something else that may mask disparities, and so is that what that's talking about, which means we shouldn't be doing it. I'm fine with risk adjusting payments, that if you have a disparity population and you need more resources to pay for language services or because folks have historically not had access and you need to give them more care, I'm fine with that. I don't understand the risk adjusting performance measure.
Maybe one way to address it would be to substitute pay for performance for risk adjusting performance measures. So in other words, I thought the recommendation in the report was to consider risk adjustment payments to providers in addition to pay for performance.
I think the confusion is around the term risk adjusting performance measures. I don't think it's the measures, at least the way I understood it. I'm not sure that that's what was intended, but we can go back and see clarity. But that, to me, is the question mark. We're not really risk adjusting measures. Okay.
I see. Okay. Norman, you had a comment? Oh, William was first. Okay.
What I thought this meant was this kind of the between within sort of phenomenon he was describing before. And this would be like to compensate for a between phenomenon where you might more generously compensate a practitioner who cares for minority population in with respect to not trying to disadvantage people because of the measures that you might otherwise have seen with them, as opposed to risk adjusting the fact that they may have lower numbers in the performance measures that you actually see, and then trying to explain that away, which would be the description of the, I guess, within phenomenon. This is what I thought that meant, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, Norman?
Yeah, now that we talk about money and pay for performance, we bring this issue to a different level. And I'm wondering, we're doing pay for performance without giving the clinician more resources, or like you were saying, I think the first step might be to provide resources, extra reimbursement for interpreting, or provide the hospital or the clinician with the resources to be able to improve their performance. I mean, for me, in orthopedics, I guess pay for performance is if you give prophylactic DVTs or if you give preoperative antibiotics, they're easy and straightforward and evidence based and relatively easy for the clinician to do, and it's basically funded. You can give the ANSEF and it's paid for by the pharmacy, but this is a tougher mandate to do and expect them to reach a certain level to get a 1% increase in their pay for performance is tough. And I'm on board. I'm on board with
that. No, I understand. I understand.
I just want to make it easy for the grassroots guy to be able to come, so to speak, comply with this and be able to. I mean, frankly, it's not the money, but it's being able to attain that level or that performance level that may be tough.
But I think the issue that all of this brings to the forefront is the fact that without the financial discussion, all of these things they're great to have, but you have to have the finances to be able to underwrite the work.
Right.
So I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. I was being a little candid or maybe a little about the interpreter in my earlier statement, but yeah, we do need them. They're important for the infrastructure, and I don't think I don't think the 1% I get for pay for performance would underwrite the interpreters and
But I think the discussion also goes to a more direct payment for interpretive services,
right,
not necessarily
right,
linked to pay for performance. In other words, you know, you get the interpreter, there's a reimbursement stream that helps to underwrite that for whatever the clinic,
right,
you know.
And then if you achieve that level, then
right,
you get your 1% or 2%.
Right, over and above, not necessarily instead of. That's the way that I'm looking at it.
Okay, well then, that's, I thank you for the clarification.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's me. I'm a clinician like you are, so
well,
that's the way I'm looking at it.
I'm just thinking of all the physicians in America.
I hear you. I understand.
Trying to comply
yeah,
with this.
I think that's what we've been talking about, is specific reimbursement for language services, or like in an ACO model, you could either have an add-on or a risk adjustment if you have an LEP population to pay either specific claims for language services, or if they just want a risk adjustment, say you'll get X percent more if it's an LEP person or whatever you're risk adjusting for. It hasn't been adopted yet, but that's what we've, you know, been trying to sort of talk about and think through at the policy level.
Marshall?
Somebody would have to do more with the communication and the, I guess, the writing. We talked about, like, different from a lot of prior NQF efforts. I mean, this is measurement, development, selection, but then also the implementation issues. They cannot be divorced. And right now, these are lists of things, and, you know, it's a place for a list of things, but there's going to be narrative that needs to be more synthetic. So, for example, the points that Norman was raising about the payments for the quality improvement infrastructure for the under-resourced settings. You know, right now, that's sort of a listed as like one option up here, but you know, like, there, that's an example of one where, you know, that probably needs to be sort of, you know, highlighted in the general company narrative. Whereas some things like, you know, exclusion reporting, you know, that's a list, but it's not. But so it's the crafting.
No, I hear you. I think there's some wordsmithing that needs to happen. I just don't know if we need to be involved in the wordsmithing, but I do agree. And there need to, I think staff needs to decide where they're going to put this as opposed to a laundry list. And that needs to happen, but I don't know that we need to be involved in that.
And interpretive
service
is just one.
There are a lot of other hidden costs. There are a lot of other hidden costs, obviously. Diet, I shouldn't say this out loud, but I keep patients extra time because of their religious beliefs. They can't be discharged at a certain time. You know, I mean, there are so many, a multitude of hidden costs, you know.
Any other comments from the group regarding this list? See, we can reach consensus. Okay, go ahead.
And so taking into account what we've talked about just now and then, as well as in Section 4 with some of the methodological issues, we just wanted to kind of go through public reporting for disparities and talking about how that should be used. So, for example, should it be used for payment and reimbursement purposes, for consumer choice? Should it be used to motivate providers to improve performance? We may have touched on some of these topics already, so if you have any additional comments.
Romana, go ahead.
So I'm curious about, or I'd like to hear thoughts about the motivating providers to improve performance, because, you know, when we talk about public reports, I think the first thing that comes to mind are public reports for the public. But again, I'm going to use my Aligning Forces for Quality experience to highlight what's taking place in 17 markets throughout the United States where there's a strong focus on public reporting. So the providers are not necessarily publicly reporting all of their measures publicly, especially the disparities measures, mostly because they don't have the race, ethnicity, and language data right now to do that. But even as they do go forward with their kind of initial public reports, they are reporting them internally within their professions, basically, which has a place in motivating performance, kind of being accountable to your profession. So when we're talking about public reports here, I think we do need to delineate whether we're talking about public reports for the public or whether we're talking about public reports for, you know, practices or you know, medical groups, whether we're talking about individual provider reports, or are we talking about disaggregating them or not, or so.
I don't know that we had addressed that explicitly, but I agree with you that it's a good point. And I do know that some of those that are collecting data, oftentimes it's shared internally, and it doesn't even make it to their website. So I do understand what you're saying. Marshall, did you have a comment? You have to turn your card around for me to see. Go ahead.
So a couple things with regards to Ramona's point. I have actually sat on a lot of quality data reporting advisory committees that try to get to the consumer, and it's really hard, really super hard, and people are like bending over backwards to make it consumer friendly, and you know what how they can search and stars and happy faces and all that kind of stuff, and it just doesn't seem to quite work. It doesn't. So I think there's still.
What is it that's so hard about it? For those of us who have not been involved in that process.
I'm not sure our healthcare market is set up for being driven by consumer choice. The comparison is like the coffee shop, when you have three coffee shops in a couple blocks and you can go and there's price and quality, and then versus going to a website and looking at all this medical data and trying to make sense of it for yourself and then making a choice with a provider and a health plan and even understanding that difference, I think is hard. Our healthcare system is very complicated. So I think there's apps that transparency and public reporting are absolutely critical. There are consumer advocates, navigators, other kind of middle people who can probably help with that interpretation, and I just would caution doing the public reporting for the consumer sake just because it's a lot of work and it's a lot of effort, and I'm not sure how much it yields, and I'm a consumer advocate.
I think the different levels of reporting, and I think what the observation was made is that we really haven't discussed that there are multiple levels. That may be sort of the ultimate. But there's still a few others that are interim levels that I think, you know,
really
they're worth, they're important in terms of, you know, motivating providers to, you know, improve quality of care. That's one of the things that we do in our, you know, clinics, and it's very effective. It's very powerful when you share the data. And
So the second thing is I think there's a really great opportunity here where the ACAs and the exchanges are coming up and running, because I know for each of the state and federal, at the federal level, the exchanges have to determine how health plans are certified to qualify to play in the exchange. And I think quality data and certainly equity issues would be great to be added into that. So and we could work fast enough to get ahead of that curve for when the exchanges become operational in 2014.
Thank you. Marshall?
Yeah, in terms of the last bullet, you know, I think it's probably all of the above, just basically, you know, money as well as then for, you know, public reporting to different audiences. And I remember very early on the first day, it may have been Ellen, I can't remember, someone made the point that even the ones, things that are designed for consumers, the mechanism probably is, you know, not the consumer comes to the power, it's really because providers realize it's public, and so they have to then, you know, act, and or else it's a large purchaser type of consumer. So in some ways, it doesn't matter probably, because once the data is out there, it's out there, but it does apply to all of those different mechanisms. So I think there were reports that they said, well, here's the list of potential mechanisms.
Thank you. Lisa?
I'm not sure this fits in the first item there, but I was wondering, is there a role here for professional societies and organizations, because they develop guidelines and their registries, and that information is often reported, and if they can be included in the loop, that would seem to be a very helpful thing to do.
Sid?
I just wanted to add, perhaps, and kind of picks up a little bit on what the troublemaker over here, Elizabeth, raised.
Troublemaker? Excuse me, co-chair. I don't think that's language you use in this committee. Please excuse them, Liz.
Politics. Sometimes it's politics.
Stop calling me a troublemaker.
But it refers back to a point that actually Elizabeth and I talked about, too, a little bit in the break, and that is whether there is another purpose that should be recognized here around assisting providers who are caring for large numbers of minority patients, safety net providers in particular. I don't know whether they want to mention safety net specifically, but whether there is an opportunity to use that information or for that information to be considered in the context of those organizations, that those providers that are offering care to large numbers. And I don't see it specifically in there. I see it for reimbursement purposes, but I don't see it recognized in the context of assistance, considering resource needs, those who need additional resources.
Also, I wanted to come back to what you were saying, Luther. I actually think that's an excellent point in terms of professional societies, and I don't know that we addressed it at any point before. So I think it's, I just wanted to highlight it, that I think it's an excellent suggestion. Other comments? Francis?
Yeah, I would just second that in terms of the professional organizations. I sit on the executive committee of the practice guidelines of the American Psychiatric Association, and I think that it would be wonderful if we could include some of these disparity measurements as part of the of our practice guidelines, and perhaps there are other organizations as well.
Other comments? Some of the societies and associations are actually making steps. You know, they're already going towards that, you know, but this would help. I think this would be very, I sit on the board of the Academic Pediatric Association, and I think that would be instrumental. Other comments?
Great. So this really concludes our discussion about the paper as a whole. I know we opened it up for any additional comments, but again, if you have any additional comments, questions, now's the time to talk about them. We're going to now transition to framing our call for measures around disparities. So are there any, Marshall?
I'll get back to mention that the answer about Carolyn Clancy at a meeting like this saying, well, don't forget the big picture. And we've mentioned maybe two or three times, most recently, I guess, Francis, but I think one of the big ones is this point about the equity measures aren't a separate thing, that they really are something that all organizations need to consider in all of their quality efforts. And so, you know, we do have some disparity-specific measures, but in some ways those are a gross minority of the different things. And so that frame in the overall document, I think, needs to be a critical one, so that it doesn't become sort of a relatively small percentage of what different organizations do.
Colette, did you have a comment?
This goes back to the conversation that we're having about the language used with regard to cultural competency. And I don't know, Robin, that maybe that this has already been hashed out, as you said, in some other committee, in terms of do we want to think about using minorities versus something else?
I'll defer to the NQF then.
Yeah, it really has, and that's a term that actually came out of the first work. If there are, I think there are ways to craft, you know, why we use this term, you know, and by this we mean, and then if you have other verbiage you like to suggest around it, but to make a sort of a whole scale, you know, reversal of terminology, I think, is really not.
I think, though, it is helpful to note that in some places in the U.S., the minorities are really not minorities anymore.
Yeah.
So it's just so that the reader understands
right.
that, you know, we know that.
Right.
Right,
so that's what I meant. Yeah, exactly. Right. That kind of is sort of framing in explanatory language. But to sort of replace that construct for another construct, I think, would be not really
okay.
a good idea.
Noted. Comments? Yeah.
Actually, I wanted to add on to that, and I'm glad Colette brought it up, because I know mainly in California, when we talk about it, we talk about communities of color, and
mm-hmm.
we're 60%
mm-hmm.
Majority, minority. So it feels like it's hopefully starting to be an outdated
mm-hmm.
term. that hopefully we can shift to a better descriptive.
I think it's a good point. I do. I think that it's a good observation, and it's always tough to read, you know, guidelines and recommendations that a committee has reached consensus on that seem devoid from reality. And I want to make sure that, to the degree that our name is going to be on it, that it's grounded. Other comments from anyone else? Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
Again, a more generic kind of comment, which is I don't know if there's a need in this document somewhere to try to make the case. What are the social goods of disparities? Why do we care about it other than for the disparate populations and the providers to take care of it? And so, you know, what are the implications for the society of dealing with these issues of disparities? There are obviously the issues of inequities and trying to achieve a fair society, and other arguments I think that have been put forward, though, for why people who are not members of disparate groups or providers should care are that sometimes we can look at disparities as the canary in the mine, and that is a lot of problems with healthcare often are first detected through issues of disparities. And so, for instance, we have the conversation about language. And so, well, you know, it's obvious if you can't counsel somebody if they don't understand the language you speak, but I think that's led to a broader conversation about health literacy for English speakers. They can't understand you either. And so that's, you know, a translation from disparities to a general quality improvement kind of benefit for all of society. I don't know if we have to articulate that or if NQF simply assumes disparities reduction. And
no, I think your point is well taken. I do.
Again, I think this comes back to context for the report, that issues around employment, employer-based, the diverse workforce that is growing in our society, the recognition that even though you may think you're not going to be affected, that there are not only the canary in the coal mine, but you've got conditions like pan flu or if you can just ground it a bit more, I guess is what we're talking about here, in a real life context, I think that will add kind of a life to and a resonance to other audiences, broader audiences, that pick up on what you're saying.
Liz?
Oh, just to follow up on what Ernie said, I think people don't realize that actually disparities cost us in so many ways, right? Because we're actually dedicating resources to taking care of patients who are sicker, or Ron Anderson makes this great argument, you know, like if you look at trauma centers and if we're not doing things, you know, all of us are disadvantaged if we can't get into a trauma center, and if we're minorities are disproportionately there, we're not doing things to prevent it, then we also miss out on that resource. So if you want to speak to people's self-interest, I think that's another way to do it.
Good point. Any other comments? Joel has his card up, and so he's going to speak in absentia over there. Any?
No.
I hear you. Did you have a comment? Yours is up? No? No. Anything else? Comments from any of the participants on the phone? I don't know if their lines are muted or not.
Operator, can you open the lines on the phone?
All lines are open.
Any comments from the phone participants? Okay. I pass on a consensus baton to you.
Okay. So next, we're going to talk about framing our call for measures. And so there's several documents that we've provided to the group to help think this through. Two are examples of previous call for measures. One should be on care coordination and the other would be on child health. The third packet of information that we provided you with is a rather lengthy document, which is our online measure submission form. And so we're not going to go through that entire form, but we really wanted to just provide that example to you so you have an idea of what we ask for in terms of submitting standards for consideration. So first, I'd like to go through the examples provided to the group, the two examples on the call for measures. And briefly, when we do a call for measures, obviously there's some contextual information around the background of the project. But the meat of that call is really around specifically the types of measures you're looking for and any subtopics. So some just examples that I pulled that we've put in the past are, specifying that we're looking for measures on patient-reported outcomes, or we're looking for measures that address healthcare utilization. In addition, we do want to be specific around the areas that should be addressed. So some examples that I pulled were measures to evaluate the capacity of primary care and specialty care, measures to address care coordination for patients with comorbidities. So it leaves the room for the committee to come up with as much specificity as you all think is appropriate. One thing I also wanted to note, if you're looking at the call for measures around child health outcomes, that committee actually crafted that call for measures. And one important point to note is they really sort of pushed the envelope in terms of requesting measures around public health. You know, that's really a new area for NQF, and we don't have very many measures around there. So they really pushed the envelope and put it out there. And not surprisingly, we got some very, very good measures that really addressed the key issues that they highlighted. And so you all as a group have that that authority and really that capacity to ask for the measures that you're looking for. Doesn't mean we'll get them all in, but I think putting it out there for measure developers to be aware of what's important for disparities and what we're ultimately looking for is where we want to go. I have also the cultural competency framework. I think you all highlighted some great suggestions for addressing cultural competency for measurement. I just wanted to pull up this framework. This is from the NQF project on cultural competency. This is the framework that we endorse. And so I just wanted to highlight the domains within that framework. But I think, again, you all touched a lot on some areas around cultural competency. So we won't prolong on that. And then finally, just recapping some of my notes from yesterday, we did get some recommendations on measures thus far, and we did get a few more today as well. The ones that I have noted are it's important that we get measures around system and structural measures for capturing disparities. Again, we'll need some more clarity to help flesh out that idea, but that's something that came out at the meeting yesterday, as well as cross-cutting measures that are really applicable for all populations. So those are the two that rose to the top. There were some more mentioned today, and I can, it was measures around, again, language services, which was heard loud and clear, and also patients' use of navigation services. And those are the two that I have in my notes today. So now's the time to open up the discussion, again, for being a little more detailed about the ideas that I have up there and providing some additional recommendations. Yeah.
Okay.
Can we have something to start with in terms of the text that was circulated with the getting this committee together? Do we have basically a title of what this is about with just some language just to look at?
I think this is all we have. I don't think there's anything else. Well, she did. She gave examples of child health and care coordination. I think that for those of us who have never drafted measures, that maybe we may need a little bit more. So let's, Francis, and then go ahead.
Yeah, on the page 51 of the report, I think there's some additional suggestions in this area.
That's a great starting point, Francis. If we want to start on page 51 from the report, they provide some suggestions on what measures should be selected. We can use that maybe as a starting point with the group.
Yeah, I just think it's that delineating the scope is a really important part of it, and trying to figure out how broad to be. But in order to get this group together, we received an email saying, hey, we're getting a group mm-hmm. together to do something. What was it that you that the NQF staff wrote to us and invited us to, you know, or had a call to have a steering committee for?
It's so, I mean, we did the task, which is basically the consensus regarding, you know, the work that we did. What, I don't understand what you're asking for. Help me understand. Yes, Romana.
So if I'm understanding what Sean is saying, when the call went out, for example, when the call went out from NQF to nominate and to convene this committee, there were certain specifications in that. There was, you know, there were certain objectives of what the role of this committee would be, what we were charged to do. So drawing from that as a starting point as well to kind of frame the overall objective that may potentially, you know, make its way into the introductory language here, but it gives us somewhat of a kind of an umbrella or a conceptual framing of why we're all here, and then we can start, you know, delving
what about
into the weeds. Okay, so.
Or what about the slides that were used for the conference call?
Some of those.
They're looking, let them just give them a few minutes, they're trying to retrieve that. Other comments? Edward, did you have a comment while we're waiting?
I just wanted to add to the list that whole the idea of access. So is there a way to include as a quality measure a measure of whether or not the organization adequately cares for minorities that are in its catchment area or in its local population?
Mm-hmm.
Again, the idea is that, you know, one way to make huge disparities go away is
mm-hmm.
to not let a certain number of people in the door or a
mm-hmm.
type of person in the door. And so I just want to be really sure
right,
that we don't promote that by
right.
Asking for a performance measure that looks at access.
Ellen?
I'm going over some measures.
Sure, go ahead.
So I really, I have my notes on page 51, really like the health-related quality of life measures idea. I know that there are some developed for pediatrics, and I'm not sure if there are for general, but it would be great to get some of those. And then what was the slide that was up before in terms of systems measures? I think there are a lot of elements that could be under that. Certainly one is IT system
mm-hmm.
and the ability to collect the information, but also what to do with it, and then and all the IT. And there's a probably national work, but there's also a statewide in California an IT consumer collaborative
mm-hmm.
where we've outlined some principles, which probably we could draw upon to fill that in. And then I know there's other, oh, I don't know, Mara probably has to just to help me out. I forget the different groups that have talked, kind of tried to define what cultural competency is
mm-hmm.
and how to operationalize it within an internal system, like diversity of the with the staff within the healthcare system, the leadership team, the training that happens from kind of member orientation all within the system. So I think those are already outlined somewhere.
The Joint Commission, when it developed its new hospital accreditation standards for cultural competency, patient centered care, and effective communication, which a number of us were involved in the development of that, we put out a roadmap that has a lot of recommendations and additional resources for hospitals, but really for anyone, on sort of implementing all of these different pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, this is a I think a good place to talk about cross-referencing to other resources. I think Mara's point's really well taken. If you look at what Tuara Good has done in this area, some of the areas you're talking about are echoed in our cultural competence assessment protocol, where you look at leadership and workforce diversity and community outreach and IT and business strategies. There are fields that are that were prioritized by and looked at by organizations as areas that they should be concentrating on, at least structurally, but then you could use and match with and encourage the matching of effectiveness measures patient satisfaction with some of the structural measures as well.
I wanted to go back to something that, Ellen, did you have another comment? I wanted to go back to something that Eric had said regarding access and to take it to another level. For some of the community providers, particularly subspecialists that simply say we don't accept Medicaid patients, that's sort of a way of cherry picking and lemon dropping so that, you know, their outcomes would probably be good because of the fact that they're not accepting those that are most at risk. I don't know how we can craft something in terms of measures that specifically alludes to that. I don't know if it's a social responsibility to, you know, accept those sorts of things. I don't know how the language that we would use, but I think that excluding Medicaid populations from, you know, different providers' panel is an easy way to reach a certain level of quality of care. Other comments? I don't see cards up. Don't get quiet on me in the last hour. Come on. Marshall?
Yeah, just a process question to make sure we understand the task. So, past day and a half, we've gone through a number of measures, existing measures, that Joel and Joe had this three categories. There were like these 700 measures of this subset will be related to disparities. They have a second category where maybe disparities weren't evident, but they still are possible, and they're part of the existing 700. So this is now the third component where we're asked to come up with what are the different potential domains which don't exist in any of the 700 existing AQF measures that we then are having this RFA to ask developers to submit actual questions or measures that then have been validated. So this is still in that particular gap. And these measures are for what purpose then? These are for like public reporting and
tell them. The full range of accountability functions, whether that's public reporting, pay for performance, whatever the case may be.
And so the audience is going to be largely big players in terms of health insurers. And
yeah, I mean, these should be measures that people feel comfortable or validated, can be used for comparison across providers, things like that. Yeah. Not necessarily just the, you know, the internal QI ones, but really ones that rise to the level of feeling like they've met a threshold and you feel comfortable comparing provider A to provider B.
And the assumption is that these are areas where basically they don't, well, that's maybe a good assumption. I was going to say the assumption is that these measures don't exist, so people are going to be developing them, or else they already exist and now people are proposing them.
I think our hope is, given the timeline for this, it's the latter. But then again, there may be that part of what we also do as part of these efforts is we signal to the field where measure development is needed, and we recognize that's not going to happen in the next few months before this call for measures goes out. So in this case, we're really saying, those of you out there who've got a measure that you've worked with that you think, you know, could be brought in, please bring it forward to NQS.
This is an issue I think either Sean or Ed brought up earlier, that some measures may be validated for like majority populations, but may not have been tested in minority populations. And so what qualifies then in terms of being a measure that is able to be submitted then? So in other words, it has to be validated upon a minority population or just validated in some population?
You know, it's really a question, Marshall, if anybody else wants to jump in. I think that in general, if it's a measure that includes the patient voice, like a survey, we would very much expect that the population to be completing it would be tested. I think for a measure that looks at outcomes of heart disease or whatever the case may be, we don't have an expectation necessarily that you would provide that data. Although, again, if it's a measure already in our portfolio that's up for maintenance and a full review again, we would expect to see those stratified results back to us.
If I could just add, at the end of the day, when NQF receives that information, you know, at some level, I think, and Helen can correct me if I'm wrong, but if the committee feels that, you know, it's otherwise a very good and solid measure, has some testing data in populations that, you know, you're not entirely satisfied with, you know, that's something that you could think about whether or not it meets the threshold to at least move over and be further considered.
Norman and then Liz.
I mentioned earlier, but there should be some measure about education for academic centers and their adherence to some of the ECGME guidelines or core competencies or their commitment to teaching culturally competent care to their residents and medical students. The other another point you asked about providers, how much of their profile would be private pay versus non-private pay. I guess it's all geographic. I mean, if a physician is in a place where it's 90% non-private and their profile is 90% private insurers, I mean, there's some disparity there. So,
but right now, that's not kept in check. In other words, in the District of Columbia, which is still, you know, predominantly African American, well, let me put it this way, it's a transition, but there's still a sizable African American population.
Right.
There are providers in the district who refuse to see Medicaid patients, and I'm not talking about just a few. I'm talking about the majority of providers in certain subspecialty areas refuse to see Medicaid patients.
So that physician's profile would not be in keeping with the geographic area.
Correct, but right now it doesn't matter. It's up to the provider to make that choice.
Right. So I guess there's no real way to compare.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. But then they may be eligible for, you know, added payments for X if they don't have that sort of at-risk population that requires additional resources. Yeah, they're likely to reach that, you know, benchmark much much quicker.
My measure failed.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, please.
Oh, just to follow up on what Norman said, and this goes under systems, is actually looking at whether organizations do training around how to care for patients from different backgrounds, cultural competency, or however you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Joint Commission has some actual language around. I mean, we can look at some of their standards that they propose, I think, as things that we could develop measures around, actually.
You know, my suggestion is that we also look at use as much as has been developed that is relevant to this work. You know, the class standards. You know, there are other people have spent hours and hours, and some of these committee members may have been a part of those committees. So let's not reinvent the wheel would be my suggestion.
So I'm sorry, I guess so the infrastructure, a measure of the infrastructure that exists? Interpreters.
Yeah.
Or also the training that they give.
And the training to nurses, etc.
Right.
All right. I'm going to go to this side of the table now for a minute. Oh, okay. Well, why don't you speak, and then we'll take all of these other folks.
In terms of resources, and this is for the NQS staff, but the Ethical Force Program for the American Medical Association put out a report on communication with vulnerable patient populations. They actually developed a number of domains, but most importantly, under those domains, such as engaging the community, workforce, collecting data, evaluating performance, health literacy, many of the things that we've talked about today, at the end of each chapter, there are a list of suggested performance measures for organizations. So that might be a starting point. I just
can give you the name again.
Yeah, the name of the report, and it's available online.
Okay.
And you get
just for the rest of us.
It's improving communication, improving care, how healthcare organizations can ensure effective patient-centered communication with people from diverse populations.
And the organization that published it is?
It's the American Medical Association.
Oh, AMA.
Ethical Force Program, but.
Yeah. Got it. That's the disclosure, right? There you go.
But it's the piece that's important in that is that at the end of each chapter, it has
their
performance measure.
Okay.
Right.
All right. We'll start right here with Ernest, and then we'll work our way down. Go ahead.
Okay. So I think this is kind of topical areas related to this reducing disparities that we haven't kind of covered so far, right? One area that we could include specifically are patient perceptions and experience of bias in healthcare settings, something I don't think we've talked about so far, and there is some science there.
Okay, thank you. And there has been, there's published literature as it relates to that. Francis?
In terms of the wording of the call, I think it might be helpful to, if we all agree with this, number 5 on page 51, if we would agree to endorse the 35 ambulatory disparity-sensitive measures, that could be referenced as like examples for people to look at as in terms of, you know, in terms of how, to help people with the process of submission.
Okay, thank you. Colette?
My comment had to do with the comment that you made in terms of let's not reinvent the wheel for things that are already specifically disparities related, but do we want to also think about things that aren't specific to disparities but are high priority, like readmission that Medicare is focusing on, where we know that disparities do exist.
Okay, good point. Mary?
I'd ask two things that we think about education in terms of training the next generations, that we would look at these issues in relationship to health professions and hospital administration and all the folks who will be making these decisions in the future. How do we include this? And as we move forward, are there ways to reference what's important in the ACA that this might directly impact as we have full implementation?
Go ahead, Dennis. I said that's too much a comment to what Mary's saying, because otherwise you don't have to wait till everybody else talks. I promise my esteemed colleagues on the right side of the table that they would go in line, and then we come back. Unless it's a comment. Not a comment. All right, there you go. It is a comment. I better let him talk. Let me let him talk, okay? And then, there you go. Go ahead.
Well, I want to build on the previous comments about looking at what the National Quality Forum has put on in terms of priority areas. There's a care coordination piece that I think might serve as a piece for, I think, us and NQS to reflect on, because care coordination is such a huge, huge issue with regard to the priority populations we're talking about. And so I think this piece in particular may be worthwhile looking at as a priority area, building on what you were saying, Claude, about what you would select out as kind of greater than in some ways.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I think a big umbrella category to include specifically is medical home concepts for vulnerable populations. Because within that, there's going to be like a set of like 6 to 8 different domains that cut a lot across a lot of things we're talking about. So access to communication, care coordination, communication with external providers, tracking and monitoring patients, quality improvement, shared decision-making, et cetera. But, and this would be medical home concepts, both patient measures. So for example, NCQA now has a medical home CAPS that's going to enter the field very soon, as well as then organizational measures, so as opposed to patients, then it would be organizational structural measures. But if you start getting into that literature and you have it in the write-up, that's going to cover a lot of things we've talked about, and then it should resonate because these things should be done more broadly. But for vulnerable populations, then there's less out there in terms of instruments which have the tailoring for a lot of the populations we're talking about.
I agree with the importance of medical home. I think I wouldn't want it to be an umbrella piece because of the nature of the way services are going to be rendered. I mean, medical home is maybe a goal, but not the nature of the way services are going to evolve.
Maybe I misspoke that. Maybe the thing is to, maybe medical home is a little more simplistic, but then just sort of going back and then pulling out like 8 different traditional domains that are used, like in if you look at, for example, this current NCQA domains in medical home, they got 68 or so that are the ones we're talking about.
Thank you. Again, the
sorry.
A care coordination. I was also thinking about the diversity of particularly health systems of leadership and of the actual staff providing the care, and also the development and use of community advisory groups that comes directly from the population.
Thank you. Next.
She mentioned the community input, the process to get community engagement and input.
Thanks. For those already spoke, Francis and Lou, let's just put your name tag down so that I know you're done. Sean?
Well, I hope I'm not changing focus or derailing, and just let me know if I'm going in a direction that you don't want to go. But I've been just thinking about what are the components that I think need to be in a call for measures and that maybe would be discussed, and there's some just basic issues of scope, and I don't know if anything requires discussion or not, but it's basically there's lots of groups you could focus on, but it sounds like this group is focusing specifically on race, ethnicity, and low English proficiency, and that's it. And would that go in the call for measures? Basically, that's the scope of this particular activity.
You know, it's a point well taken, because I mean, as I go around the country speaking about cultural competence, you know, that's one issue that is oftentimes raised. It's like, well, what about, you know, the physically, you know, disabled or challenged, or what about the gay and lesbian, and you know, so I think it's a point of discussion. We may get that pushback from the field once this goes out as to what, you know, and if it is exclusively focused on language or race or ethnicity, then it needs to be so stated. She says yes.
Another one is that
before you continue, perhaps it would be helpful to at least whatever report we submit, that it states that we acknowledge that diversity includes other things beyond race and ethnicity, but the task of this, you know, group was focused exclusively in that area. Okay.
Another big one with NQF, all the measures are required to be suitable for public reporting. And that is, you know, something that some measures may or may be less amenable to public reporting versus internal quality improvement. But if that's a requirement from NQF, that probably should be highlighted in the call for measures, and because it probably would make a difference in terms of which measures would be approved or not.
Yeah, all of our calls for measures make it explicit what the purpose of NQF and those measures are. And it is really broadly accountability, not just public reporting. So pay for performance, whatever the case may be.
And go ahead. Finish. And then some statement about the level, the unit, the level of reporting, and I'm sure that would be in there too, but are there any, so, you know, individual practitioners, community, hospitals,
mm-hmm.
plan,
mm-hmm.
national.
Right, and we touched on that.
So
yeah.
is all of the above, and including kind of the national population level reporting as well, because it kind of includes the AHRQ, National Disparities Report. Is there anything you'd like take off the table?
Yeah, it's another really good point. We are happy to accept population health level measures as long as there's a comparison group. So national would be kind of hard, unless you're looking at international, but certainly we've taken in as part of the Child Health Project, for example, Medicaid state program measures compared to each other, things along those lines. But I think it would be important in this project in particular to elucidate what levels of analysis we're referring to.
Thank you. Good observations, Sean. Good questions. I know you were trying to probe, you know, but, you know, it raised some important issues that we needed to clarify. Yeah. Any other comments? Nicole?
Okay. Thank you. We got several recommendations from the group on that, so that was very helpful. And so the next piece that I wanted to touch on, again, we reviewed this a little bit yesterday, and that's NQF's approach moving forward for addressing disparities. And before we kind of dive into that, I wanted to highlight to the group within our measure submission form, which is that thicker document that you all have, where we request information around disparities and maybe use that as a starting point and see if, you know, the group agrees with that approach, and certainly feel free to provide some additional suggestions. So that's kind of a thick packet, and I'll also pull it up on. So the pages aren't numbered, but, you know, I'll let you know which pages I'm referring to. So to provide some background and context, the first kind of two pages really talk about the conditions that must be met for the measure to even be considered by NQF. And again, you know, this is with all of our measures. The measure has to be in the public domain, or a measure steward agreement has to be signed. Again, as we just mentioned, it has to be intended for both public reporting and quality improvement. The measure does have to be fully specified and tested. And also, we do request that the measure developer address harmonization and issues around related measures, related or competing measures. So moving on, if you go to page 4 of that packet, that section then focuses on the specifications of the measure. So we get into the meat of the measure, the description, the numerator, denominator. So on page 4, it's section DE-5. You'll see there's, and this is just a checkbox area for them to first identify if they choose to do so that the measure is addressing disparities, as well as some additional cross-cutting areas that are highlighted in that section. And then moving on to page 5, that's section 2A1-5, you'll see the target population category. We do also then provide an opportunity for the measure developer to specify whether or not that target population is disparity sensitive or not.
So would the form change for this process, or it would be the standard form that people would use and you would ask them to check these boxes?
It would be the standard form.
Okay.
But I think part of the bigger picture for us is as we look forward towards updating these forms, which you do probably annually, the idea would be what else, based on our discussions, would you ask about disparities to ask the submitters to submit the information you think would be valuable?
Okay.
And you could also do supplemental requests for these specific measures as you need to.
Moving on through the form, if you all go to page 8. Yes. Sorry. Question. Sorry.
Well, I mean, if you can come back to it, I was just going to ask. I mean, I'm just looking at the numerator and denominator. As the form is laid out for the specifications. My question is, does that work? Does that format work for all the types of measures that may be on the table? Like, for example, if you identify a disparity population and now the goal is basically measure improvement for some particular endpoint or process in that population, sure, a numerator and denominator works. Are there any measures where the actual focus of the measure is measuring the quantifying the disparity, which implies a comparison between two populations? In that case, you don't just have a simple numerator and denominator anymore, but I don't know to what extent those are the types of measures that will be submitted.
Accept attachments or whatever we need if it doesn't quite fit in the box. We actually even revised the submission form for the recent project, which is in research use measures, because they don't fit this box at all. So if we need to do that, we can do that for this project as well.
Any other comments? Francis? Francis first and then Ernest?
Yeah, this is for, there's no page numbers, but the subject topic areas, and again, this might be the standard NQF.
For the beginning or the end of the document?
This is the fourth page in.
Okay.
It says subject topic areas, and again, this might be standardized, and there's no changing it, but I'm just wondering about having mental health be like mental health / substance abuse. To include that.
You want to make it too difficult.
Slash.
Okay. Ernest?
I think this group has created a more formal definition of disparities sensitive than previously existed. So I was wondering if you wanted to include that definition in the form someplace. And also possibly have a checkoff box about what qualifies as disparity sensitive. Is it because it has a much higher prevalence in a particular group?
Yeah, good point.
Group or
excellent
particular
point.
Quality group?
Very, very good point. Liz? Oh, I'm sorry. Then Sean. Go ahead, Liz.
Just to follow up on that, disparities means a lot of things to different people, and I know it just says disparities. And for instance, I don't think a lot of people think of language groups mm-hmm. as a disparities population. They think, oh, black, white, mm-hmm. Latino. Mm-hmm. White. So I think that maybe adding some definition or some more detail around that would be helpful. Oh, there are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sean?
So that'd be
no, was it Sean? You didn't, no more? Okay. Other comments? Excellent suggestions and comments. Anyone else?
Yeah, William, please.
Looking at that same group of topics or subject areas, some things kind of can't really be broken down to organ systems, I guess. And so, for instance, pain, for instance, is a disparity. It isn't listed as an organ system. It's not there. And that might be something that one might want to look at.
Excellent point. Yeah.
Other subjects, I see here, musculoskeletal, thank you, but what about children or pediatrics? I don't see that.
It's below it.
Is it?
It allows you to choose by condition, proximity area, and then population. So
oh, I see.
Control.
All right,
yes.
Thank you.
Come on, give us some credit for the musculoskeletal.
Yeah, I mean,
come on. That's not the first time we got it.
Children's important, too.
Donna? Oh, did you hear? Okay.
Oh.
All right. So Donna and then Liz.
Yeah, there are some categories on the form that we want to discourage. So, for example, it asks about risk adjustment type, and I wonder if people developing or submitting performance measures might take that to mean that they should risk adjust when, in fact, we would like to discourage that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Liz?
Yeah, I noticed there's a section called importance. And it says demonstrate a high impact aspect of healthcare, and I wonder if we want to say reducing disparities. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know the page.
Towards the beginning, towards the end.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's right after care setting level of analysis importance. 1A1.
Okay.
I wonder if reducing disparities.
Oh, the reason why, yeah.
Or something along those lines.